This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Know-How is brought to you by CashFly.
This episode of Know-How is brought to you by Drobo, a family of safe and expandable yet simple-to-use storage arrays. Drobos are designed to protect your important data forever. Visit drobo.com/twit and use the code TWIT100 to save $100 off a Drobo Mini, Drobo 4-Bay, or Drobo 5M. And by PillPack, a full-service pharmacy that combines convenient packaging, modern technology, and personalized service to make your life easier. Visit PillPack.com/twit to save $20 on vitamins and OTCs when you transfer your prescription.
Today on Know How, welcome to Barcelona. Welcome to Know How. It's the Twitch show where we build, bend, break, and upgrade. I'm Father Robert Ballas here, the Digital Jesuit. And as you may have noticed, we're not in the studio today. In fact, I'm across the world in Barcelona, Spain for Mobile World Congress 2016. We've got a special treat for all you know-it-alls who have dropped in to watch. We're going to show you some of the tech, some of the gear, some of the techno-lust that we found in Barcelona. Let's send you off with our first bit of tech. Hey, know-it-alls. At MWC, it's not just mobile phones and projectors. We also get quite a bit of logic. Now, I know a lot of you have been playing with Arduino the last couple of months, making everything from steampunk goggles to quadcopter controllers. But what if you need a bit more power? What if you want the logic to be able to put your new project online, on the internet, or connected to the wide world that's out there? That's when you need Intel and a little bit of Edison. I'm speaking with Al Baer, who's going to explain what Intel is doing with a higher grade of hardware. Al Baer, what is the Edison?
Well, now we all know how Arduino and how Raspberry Pi worked, but with the Internet of Things, that everybody needs a little bit more power in terms of connectivity to the internet or having more than one connected, for example, in a house when we have many smart devices. So here is when Intel offers us the possibility of very easily developing through their own tools or their own environment development tools to turn anything into a smart device.
Now, I've got to ask, we've got a lot of experience playing with Arduino devices. Why would I need more firepower attached to my Arduino? What does that let me do?
Okay, for example, now here we have the ability of running Node.js as long as with JavaScript. So we have access to some tools that with Arduino we want. For example, the main important thing is to use a server tool. So we can use this little thing as a server. So that's an example of what we couldn't do with Arduino.
And what I love about this is this gives us a much more competent user interface than, say, Sketch that I use for Arduino. Tell me about programming a device like Edison with, say, HTML5.
Okay, so Intel offers us also an XDK, so we can develop for these tools very easily. For example, here we have some Node JavaScript code that is actually running on this board right now. So as we can see, we are inside a Linux machine and it's fully functional. Obviously, it's not like a full Linux running there, but it has all its capabilities. And with this tool, we can very easily like run the app, debug it, and download code within seconds. So it's real-time developing.
One of the exciting things that you showed me is this. This is your Groove development kit, starter kit, which gives me the ability to use a bunch of I2C devices with, say, that Arduino board on top of the Edison and really have sort of a plug-and-play way to get sensors and displays connected to my Edison. Who is this for? Who would you say should pick up a Groove kit and start developing?
Obviously, for education, this will be amazing, but for anyone who wants to start in developing smart devices, even at its home or at business or whatever, this is a good way to start because this is a very small sample of everything you can do with this.
Albert, that's fantastic. Now, if they wanted to find more about the Edison, more about what Intel is doing for this kind of development, where can they go online?
They can simply search for Edison board or XDK. Everything they'll find is free and very easily to buy and start developing.
Albert, thank you very much for speaking with us. Thank you for sharing the knowledge with our audience. Now, if you want to move past that Arduino, if you're looking at a way to put your project on the internet, if you want to make something that will truly be the Internet of Things, check out Intel, check out Edison, and get grooving. We'll get right back to our know-how special at Mobile World Congress in Barcelona, Spain. But before we do, let's go ahead and thank the sponsor of this episode of Know-How, and that's Drobo. Now, Drobo has been with the Twit family for a long, long time. They were back in the cottage with Leo when we first started. And, well, I love the fact that they are mission-specific storage. Now, there are a lot of companies that provide storage these days, but Drobo understands that sometimes you need different types of storage. Sometimes it just needs to be fast. Sometimes it needs to be network connected. And always, always, it needs to make sure that you don't ever lose any of your precious digital data. Well, that's exactly what Drobo does. Drobo is the perfect device for network-attached storage as a media server, a file server, or a backup solution. The 5N is easy to use. You just plug it into your switch or router and you're ready to go. Their app lets you backup data to two different cloud service providers or sync via BitTorrent sync. So if you want to do the 3-2-1 backup, it's built into the solution. It also works well with Plex on the new Apple TV. If you are a photographer, I suggest you check out the Drobo Mini and the Drobo 5D. The Drobo Mini is what Leo uses to shuttle large amounts of data between the studio and his home. The Mini is lightweight and portable at just over 2 pounds, 4 drive bays for up to 8 terabytes of storage. The 5D is a desktop unit with space for 5 3.5-inch drives and a maximum capacity of 64 terabytes. Both have an optional mSATA SSD acceleration bay. It's exactly like it sounds. It's a cache, an ultra-fast cache for your array. If it guesses right, if it's got the information there that you need, rather than having to go through the relatively slow hard drives, you get it straight off the SSD. It is a unique solution, and I tell you, it works really, really well. Now, Drobo is something that I tried way back when I was living in Hawaii, and I got to say, I love the fact that I could plug it straight into my computer, or I could use it as a storage array on the network. I love the fact that I get to choose, do I want a network connected? Do I want USB connected? Do I want Thunderbolt connected? In other words, I love the fact that Drobo gives me choice. Drobos are reliable. Data received by your Drobo and not yet written to a disk is protected. Anyone who's run a NAS knows that this is the nightmare scenario, that somehow, some way, the array gets corrupted or you lose power just as you're trying to write data to the array. It can be lost forever. Not so with a Drobo. They have an internal eUSB device where data is copied. So if there's a power failure, it protects you against a long data loss. It's also expandable. They've got their Beyond RAID technology that lets you expand on the fly and, get this, mix and match different types of drives. No longer are you stuck with replacing all the drives at once or making sure they're all the same model or all from the same manufacturer. You just replace them as you need to increase your storage or add reliability. It's also fast with support for Thunderbolt, Gigabit Ethernet, and USB 3.0. You get to figure out exactly where you need the storage and how fast it needs to go. What I want you to do is I want you to visit drobo.com/twit. That's drobo.com/twit to learn more and to check out their complete line of products. And when you use the code TWIT100, you'll save $100 off the purchase of a Drobo Mini, Drobo 4-Bay, or Drobo 5N. Again, that's drobo.com/twit. drobo.com/twit. And use the code TWIT100. And we thank Drobo for their support of this know-how special. Hey, know-it-alls. I know that you've been getting hot and heavy into Raspberry Pis and Arduinos, but what if I told you that there was a development kit that would allow you to make products that were like full-fledged smartphones? No, it's not a fantasy. It's reality. In fact, it's in here. I'm speaking with Andrew from Synaptics, who's going to explain why this is your next DIY project. Andrew, what's in this magic box?
Well, let's open it up and find out. As we open it up, lo and behold, this is the first prototype of a communicator device that Synaptics is going to make available by about Q3 of this coming year. And what it features is a Qualcomm 910 single board computer that's booting Android and will certainly shortly be running on a QHD display that utilizes Synaptics' touch display driver integration technology. So this is the highest resolution display that's going to be available for the hobbyist market, and I'll keep my fingers crossed that it'll still be the highest one by Q3. And it'll be a full touchscreen development kit that runs Android that you can put together and run as sort of a handheld communicator. So it'll run all the Android apps, you know, such as FireChat or anything that you can sideload. But we'll also make available the ability to run out I/O so that you can take this thing lock, stock, and barrel and utilize it as a touchscreen GUI for the next DIY project you want to make, like a touchscreen controlled coffee maker, for instance, or a rice cooker, you know. So it'll be all the power of having a touchscreen without having to bring up and, you know, find the right drivers and calibrate the touchscreen, calibrate the display quality. That'll all be done, and we'll, you know, plan on making all the software and source available, you know, for the developer community.
Andrew, what I love about this kit is not just because it really it strikes at the heart of the DIY or the maker. It's that we have seen communicators. We have seen DIY phones, but normally they've been a bit clunky, which is a charm all of their own. But this is the first time I've seen a kit that would allow someone to make a product that almost looks like a mass-produced product. I mean, this would look like an iPhone or an Android phone. Now tell me, as they start to get their hands on hardware like this, because there's going to be more and more of these development kits available, what would you say would be the big design challenges for that DIYer, for that maker who wants to take a kit like this and turn it into a product, as you mentioned?
Well, I think the big design challenge is to, you know, create your own compelling user interface. I mean, I think we'll give you all the tools, but, you know, a lot of that is going to be up to your imagination. And we're really looking forward, you know, to seeing, you know, what can be done. I mean, I think that the other question that you may ask yourself is, why is Synaptics even bothering to do this at all? And I think that, you know, while we do, you know, enjoy helping the hobbyist community, one of the things that we have also learned is that a lot of our customer engineers are hobbyists themselves. So what better way, you know, to get our technology into the hands of engineers that are also our customers than by, you know, making an actual, you know, product that they'll use in their spare time.
Okay, let's get really geeky. Turn this thing over and explain to our audience what are some of the things that you've done here. What are the individual pieces? What's the discrete logic? If they were looking to design a project like this, what would they need to learn before they could put it together?
There might be a little bit of soldering involved, but we're really going to do a lot of the heavy lifting for the stuff that may not be as interesting. So, for instance, right here, this is where the battery is going to go. So we've actually designed an adapter board that will actually allow this whole thing to run you know, in a battery operated mode, so you can take it with you and not have to plug it in. I mean, it sounds like a small, you know, advancement, but I think it's going to be a huge, you know, have a huge impact on being able to make this thing a viable, you know, product that you can carry around by yourself. Second of all, of course, we'll design all the interfacing that's going to be required to boot up the single board computer with the MIPI-based display that's already, you know, that, you know, we'll be supplying as well.
I absolutely love this. Now, if they wanted to find out more about this kit, where would they go to find out about pricing and availability?
Well, one of the things that we will be working on is making this available to, you know, general DIY, you know, the community through the various known distributors that are already out there. So stay tuned for news about that. We have nothing that we're ready to announce at this point, but, you know, you can expect to be able to find, you know, this kind of a kit available through the standard channels shortly by about Q3 of this year.
Andrew, thank you so very much. You've just collectively made our audience squee with joy. Folks, if you're a maker, if you're a DIYer, your next smartphone may come from your house. I'm at P2Y speaking with Steven, who has a product for those who are interested in protecting their electronics. Steven, we've heard this claim before. There are a lot of products that we've actually tried on our network, not all have worked properly, that are supposed to keep your electronics from being destroyed when they get wet, when they get submerged. Show me what you do.
Okay, so we have a technology that protects electronics from water and corrosion damage, and we've treated over 100 million smartphones to date with this technology. So if I demonstrate that now, I have a normal paper tissue, And when I introduce that paper tissue to water, it very quickly absorbs it. And there is no commercial value with that whatsoever. If I take that same tissue that we've treated with the P2i splash-proof technology and introduce it to water, the look and feel is exactly the same. But rather than absorbing it, it simply repels it. So it just beads up and rolls off. And it's that technology we're applying to electronic devices, which is now proven to reduce field failure return rates of smartphones by up to 50%.
Let's get techie. How is this substance actually applied? Because I know it has to be done on the molecular level in order to get a full repellent effect across all the electronics. You've developed a process that is very good at depositing it in an even layer.
That's correct. So this is a vacuum-based, low-pressure application. As you say, it works at the molecular level, and this is essential for getting reliability and repeatability across millions of devices. There are other solutions out there that claim to be able to do this, but unless you're using a vapor phase technology at low pressure and using the pulse plasma, then only then will you get this technical performance.
And I think that's one of the keys. That for me, that's what makes this not marketing speak. This is an actual technological process that's not just squirting a bunch of liquid onto electronics and hopefully it stays. This is a very defined, very repeatable process of putting electronics into a chamber where you put the substance, expose it to low pressure, and then it will gradually disperse into every bit and piece and surface that it needs. Now, let's show them actually how it works on electronics. Here, we have two electronic plates. One of them has been treated, and one of them has been not. And actually, let's not tell the audience which is which. I think it's going to become very evident very quickly. Show me what happens.
Okay, so we'll place the water onto these two strip boards here. And this is designed to protect against a full range of environmental threats. As you say, one of these has been treated with our protective technology to prevent corrosion damage. The other one has not. So imagine your mobile phone. Water gets inside. If it's not been treated by P2i, it will get fried. That leads to return rates and unhappy customers.
In just a couple of seconds, I think our audience knows which is which. Obviously, we're passing current through this right now, and you're seeing electrolysis, you're seeing instant corrosion of the non-treated board. So the proof is in the pudding, so to speak. If they wanted to find out more about P2i, about your solution, about the technology, where can they go?
They go to www.p2i.com.
Stephen, thank you very much for sharing your technology. Thank you for showing us what's possible when you do it right. Here at MWC, we're trying to keep you covered. The Internet of Things holds a lot of promise, but that promise goes unfulfilled if you can't keep your IoT devices connected, which is why we're here at Intel, and I'm speaking with Brandon, who's going to explain how Intel is taking LTE in a more narrow direction to keep you connected at all times. Brandon, what is NB-IoT?
So narrowband IoT, or NB-IoT, is a different take on LTE, where we're showing a 180 kilohertz network that instead of traditional LTE of being 5 megahertz, you have a much smaller bandwidth, so your data is lower. But for IoT devices, what we're having here is repetitions where every time we double the repetitions on the sensor platform, you essentially get 1 to 3 dB of gain that traditional LTE just can't withhold. So what we're doing is we have 128 repetitions. We're getting 20 dB of gain over the traditional network. So as you can see in this demo, we move around inside this rural environment with two different bikers. And what the bikers are showing is you've got the GPS location and the battery life of those bikes. And so if you were a rental company, what you'd be able to have is you'd be able to monitor your assets the entire time. So as they move throughout this, you can see they've got a good connection, a cell edge, and then just outside of cell edge. And so as the bikers move outside of that cell edge, you see traditional LTE will drop off. You no longer can monitor that asset anymore. You don't know if the bike is gone, if the rider is missing, or if they no longer have battery power anymore. You can see the LTE disconnects. You can see the NB-IoT is still connected. So he sits out here. He's still monitoring his position. It still has the battery life, so you can still access that rider's information. As he moves back in, you can still see that the LTE connection picks back up, but you've lost him for that entire time, so you don't know where he was in between. Finally, they get back to the home station, back safely, and everything is fine. But the whole time, you want to be able to watch that asset, watch your rider, and maintain kind of that safety. And so what we have is a Nokia core network and an Ericsson core network that is no different than today's traditional LTE, but Intel has gone through with their 7262 and made an NB IoT solution that has a low power, greater coverage area for IoT sensors.
For the geeks at home who may be looking at this demonstration saying, I kind of get it, but what exactly is happening? Essentially what you're saying is a traditional LTE signal needs a certain amount of bandwidth, a certain amount of frequency spectrum available to it in order to stay connected, to have a signal that is consistent. With narrowband, because you're only using a very, very small bit of that bandwidth, you can maintain that connection with both using less power and also at times when you would completely lose the traditional LTE signal.
That is correct. And it's because of that narrow band that you can maintain that connection and be able to not have that disconnect as you get into worse and worse environments.
Now, for our makers and for our DIYers, this is sort of something important, because as they start to create devices with whatever they might be using, their Raspberry Pi, their Arduino, the things that go everywhere and tell us everything about everything, to have a connection solution that will maintain its connection to a base station, maybe not transmitting video or pictures, but transmitting, say, GPS location data or asset tag information, that's very attractive. Where do you see this being deployed? Where do you see this being used?
So one of the greatest applications here is any kind of mobile environment where if you are outside of rural area or in kind of a garage or you go underground in the metro, you lose that LTE connectivity because you're in such an attenuated environment that you no longer can maintain that full LTE strong signal. And so with NB-IoT, using those replications, you can maintain it all throughout underground, rural, anywhere essentially, where LTE just, it can't.
Oh, Brandon, if they want to find out more about narrowband Internet of Things, where can they go online? To read up about the technology, to read up about what Intel has been doing with it, to read up about the partnerships that Intel has formed to test this new tech?
So there's actually three great places. You've got Nokia, Ericsson, and Intel's website that will all cover all of IoT. You can also go to our giant ecosystem of service providers that are endorsing NB-IoT, including Docomo, AT&T, T-Mobile, LG, etc.
Brandon, thank you very much for speaking with us. Thank you for sharing your technology.
You.
I'm sure our folks in the know-it-all audience will love to play with this tech. Remember, folks, if you're making the next generation of Internet of Things, think narrow. Again, we'll get right back to Barcelona, Spain, but before we do that, I want to take the opportunity to thank the sponsor of this know-how special, and it's PillPack. Now, what is PillPack? It's just the easiest way to get your over-the-counter and prescription drugs in an easy-to-use format. Now, this is what it looks like. All of your pills in easy-to-tear-off packets that separate them by day and time. Now, if you've ever wondered about what's the best way to take your pills, this is going to be it. Not only that, PillPack isn't just a way to package your pills. It's not just a way to remind you to take your pills. It is the easiest way to get your prescriptions and your OTCs from a company that understands what you need to care about. Now, your PillPack arrives in a convenient, recyclable dispenser. It has easy-to-read labels that include an image of each medication and direction. Now, PillPacks are pre-sorted, and they deliver your medications and vitamins in those easy-to-tear packets. They're individually labeled with a date and time for each dose, because they use robots and digital imaging technology to make sure that you get the right medication in each and every single pack. Now, it's not just robots and digital imaging. They've got pharmacists on staff who are part of the PillPack equation. They are available for you 24/7 from the privacy of your own home, which I love because it means no more long lines at the pharmacy or awkward conversations with your pharmacist. You just find them online and boom, you're ready to go. Now, there are no extra costs beyond your standard copays, and shipping is always free. It's compatible with most major insurance plans, including most forms of Medicare Part D. When you sign up for PillPack, they make sure that your insurance is compatible before they transfer any of your medications over. No more unexpected bills, no more surprise when you get the first invoice and you realize that your healthcare plan doesn't cover it. PillPack will take care of all of that for you. It was recognized by Time Magazine as a top 25 invention, and Jill Duffy gave it a great review in PC Mag, who named PillPack an editor choice for health service. There's also a PillPack medication reminder app for the iPhone and the Apple Watch, so if you want to get your medication into the digital age, PillPack helps you to do that. PillPack is simple, convenient, and modern, and you won't believe how easy it is to use until you try it.
Here's what I want you to do. I want you to visit pillpack.com/twit to sign up now. Their site is beautiful, and it only takes 5 minutes to sign up. When you use our link and transfer your prescriptions to PillPack, you'll get a credit for $20 worth of vitamins and OTCs. That's pillpack.com/twit. pillpack.com/twit. And we thank PillPack for their support of this know-how special.
Now, I know there are a lot of you who are building out their backhaul, or maybe you're looking at options for creating a mesh, but backhaul gets expensive with fiber, and mesh, well, doesn't always work properly, which is why I'm speaking with Brent at Intel, who's got, well, a new way for you to consider your connectivity. Brent, what is this?
So what we're looking at is using new bands to create new opportunities for mesh solutions. So as you mentioned, the cost of delivering fiber to hundreds of times of more small cells, Wi-Fi, and 5G access doesn't scale particularly well. So what we've enabled is we're reusing 802.11ad technology, existing Intel shipping components, and we're working in trials right now with some of our partners to explore how could we use these in new environments to expand the capacity of our 4G systems and enable the path towards 5G.
One of the things that I love that you're doing is that you are reusing the same bits of bandwidth and frequency over and over because you're playing with polarization. In fact, you've got a module here that shows what one of your backhaul units might look like. How does that work? So as I'm looking at, say, delivering across a gap in an urban center, I'm worried about RF connectivity, I'm worried about interference, I'm worried about my continuous throughput. How do I use a module like this to guarantee that I could, say, keep an SLA?
Sure. So when we use a phase array antenna up at, let's say, 600 megahertz, 700 megahertz, it tends to have the challenge of being extraordinarily large. But the 60 gigahertz band, some things get harder when we move up. Some things get profoundly easy. Building an array like this with 128 antennas fits into a very small package. We've got it demonstrated here inside of a streetlight. It works well, even with multiple sectors, in a reasonably small form factor, waterproof and fanless solution. This is exciting because now I can create very efficient, very small beams that allow me to shoot over very long ranges. A solution like this with 128 antennas should be able to achieve like 400-meter range at a 43 dBm EIRP. We can create narrow beams, but not just narrow beams. We could use beam broadening to create whatever kind of beam it is that we're trying to accomplish. And it's not just game. We're keeping those side lobes as small as possible, and we're minimizing interference. Here at MWC, we've got a demonstration where we're running with an application layer throughput of 5.6 gigabits per second. And yet right behind us, we've got three or four other demos also running on the exact same band on the same channels, and we're getting good, stable performance. That spatial separation that we achieve with these tiny little beams makes it challenging to provide anywhere available non-line-of-sight access, but it's fantastic for providing the highest possible capacity and the highest possible spatial reuse. Using these solutions in conjunction with those non-line-of-sight bands mean that we get the best of both worlds.
There are a lot of people there who are concerned about using millimeter wave radio, especially in the 60 gigahertz range, because, yes, it gets attenuated by the air. It gets attenuated by oxygen molecules. It gets attenuated by water vapor. But if you consider it as you're describing it, as not just a backhaul, but as a platform, as a mesh, and then, for example, in the application here, in a street lamp, that attenuation of signal actually becomes an asset because it now means I can reuse the same bits of frequency over and over again as I go down from one block to the next, one building to the next. Tell me a little bit about how you envision the deployment of this in a dense urban environment.
Absolutely. And it's funny, what you said was kind of what went through my head. About 8 or 9 years ago, I was working with a vendor who was doing a great job building a wireless backhaul system with parabolic dishes. And it was amazing what they accomplished. They were able to get rid of fiber backhauls from almost every site in their deployment. It was awesome. So much better than fiber. But there were still challenges. And when I started looking at millimeter wave, right around that same time, we saw something really interesting, exactly what you said. Some of the things that were challenging about the millimeter wave weren't really particularly problematic in the use case we were exploring here. And some of the strengths changed the game. So what we're trying to accomplish in these environments, in the streetlights, is a deployment characteristic where I'm going to have a very high density of basically high-speed 1 gig, 10 gig backhaul requirements. That might be connecting Wi-Fi, 4G small cells, 5G access, maybe even high data rate IoT devices like cameras and other things. If I need those densely deployed throughout the environment, I already get the opportunity to create pathways at hundreds of meters, line of sight between the nodes for free. I'm not putting nodes out purely for the perspective of relay. I'm putting nodes out where I need to consume data, and I'm getting the means by which to relay that traffic to those locations more or less for free.
Okay, Brent, I'm going to ask you to stare into your crystal ball. And if let's say I'm doing a deployment across an urban center, I'm working with an enterprise who needs to go from building to building, maybe even city to city, how do you see this kind of technology being used in my deployment? Where is the best use case as I'm combining the different technologies, especially wireless technologies, for my deployment plan?
Sure. For this particular solution, what you're going to be looking for is locations where you want and will value the steerability of this technology. This solution can steer from plus 60 degrees to minus 60, plus 30 to minus 30. That's unique. A parabolic dish is a fantastic technology. It gives me a tremendous range, but it doesn't give me the ability to change and adapt. I want to deploy a piece of equipment on the side of the building today and not just have it running 10 years from now, but I want it to be able as a platform to shift to meet the changing requirements of the carrier over that 10-year window. That means software capabilities. Okay, I'm from Intel. You know we're going to say that. Software capabilities that allow network function virtualization in that. Let's say, for instance, I was a non-traditional carrier, and I had the forethought to put these out in an environment in a high density, and I found the opportunity to lease each of these ports to a number of different operators and other vendors that require this access. This is really exciting. I'd be able to reuse that capability, possibly even provide secure software partitions for them to operate their services directly on the hardware as well. It's kind of like, you know, how the tower operators today enable a whole ecosystem. We're able to do that now with extremely high-speed gigabit access.
Brent, thank you very much for this overview. I'm sure our audience is going to want to find out more about what Intel is doing with millimeter wave radio. If they wanted to see what you've done with the tech and see how you've pushed the solution, where could they go online to read more?
Sure. I think Intel's going to be putting out more and more information. Intel's really excited about 5G. We've got a lot of things that came out related to MWC. Hopefully you'll be seeing those come across your screen, and there'll be more as time goes on.
After 3 days of moving around Mobile World Congress here in Barcelona, Spain, I have to say that as a DIY and as a maker, I'm excited by the technology that has been presented to me. We've seen a little bit of everything, from a tablet from Lenovo that is remarkably smart about where it actually is in the real world, to the VR goggles that we all wanted from Samsung, to a new phone concept from LG that gives us some modularity that opens up the world for things that might be. And really, for the DIY and the maker, that's what a conference like this is all about. It doesn't matter if it's CES or DEF CON or here, Mobile World Congress, we get to see technology being given to us that we can then take and use in new and exciting and unexpected ways. And again, for the DIY and maker, there is no better way. Until next time, I'm Father Robert Ballasaire, the digital Jesuit with the Twit TV Network, saying that now you know how, go to Barcelona. Oh, and Brian, I'm glad you're not here. Ah.